All right, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm so tired.
I'm also so tired.
We went, like, we didn't go out.
We stayed in. We stayed in hard. We stayed in hard last night.
I'm so tired.
And I'm really tired.
It's so sleepy.
Yeah.
And Liam didn't spend the night here last night because he's, like, house sitting.
Oh, yeah.
And he came home and woke me up at like 7 and I was like, go away.
I would have been so angry.
I wasn't actually saying, sometimes I'm really angry when he does stuff like that. And then he was like talking to me and telling me all this stuff and I was like, And then he left and I was like, thank God. But then he was cleaning the house, which is okay because the house needed to be cleaned and I'm happy I didn't have to do it. But so loud. He's so loud. Such a big guy. So much room to move his arms about and make noise.
And be loud.
Be loud. And I was like, so sleepy. So, I'm here.
Yes.
I'm alive.
Yes.
How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. It's still a little hot for me outside, but
It's coming.
It's coming. I know the cold front is going to come soon.
It's like in the next couple days.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Okay. It'll be fine. Yeah, and so this week, I chose Swiss Army Man because Allison hadn't seen it, and it's on Netflix. And then for Patreon, we are going to be doing that movie Palm Springs with Andy Samberg. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Me neither. But I like Andy Samberg.
I like Andy Samberg, too. So,
you know, we should watch Pop Star.
Oh, my God, we should sometime.
I really like that movie.
I remember one time we went to Sam's Club, and you, like, played me the entire album.
Because the entire album is amazing. Actually, if you didn't know, after we do Popstar, we are gonna turn all of our listeners on to the Popstar soundtrack.
Yes,
because it's amazing.
Amazing.
So funny. Okay, so let's talk about this plot.
This 2016 film.
Of this 2016 film, starring Paul Dano
and Daniel Radcliffe and Emily Elizabeth Winstead.
I wouldn't call her a star, but there's only like 7 people in the film,
so she is one of them.
She's one of the main. She's the third.
She's the third
most important.
Yes.
So, Hank Thompson. Thompson. Already off to a good start. Mm-hmm. 2 words in, I've already fucked up. Hank Thompson, a man marooned on an island, is on the verge of hanging himself, but sees a corpse wash up on the beach. He tries to resuscitate it, but the corpse bemuses him with its incessant flatulence. This is literally the beginning of the movie. You're like, huh. Okay. I see. You're like, Daniel Radcliffe got paid some money.
Some money.
To do this. Okay. As the tide begins to wash the corpse away, Hank watches as its farts propel itself around on the water. Hank immediately mounts the corpse and rides it across the ocean like a jet ski, landing on a mainland shore but far from civilization. That night, the two of them hide in a cave from the rainstorm, and after a runoff pours into the corpse's mouth, Hank realizes the next morning that the corpse has yet another power.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used like a well for a seemingly infinite source of drinkable water. The corpse also begins a slow transition into speaking and acquires a grasp of the English language, adopting the name Manny. Hank and Manny continue their quest using Manny's erections, fueled by a swimsuit magazine they find, as a compass. Manny has forgotten everything about his former life, but Hank tries to teach him various concepts about life. But Manny's childlike and shameless interpretations of these concepts conflict with what Hank considers socially acceptable behavior. Over the course of their journey, Hank teaches Manny the joys of eating out, going to the movies, and partying, using crudely constructed props and sets made from plants and garbage they find.
And dressing up in costumes.
Yeah. Just him, though.
It's just Paul Dano.
Just Paul Dano dressing up in costumes. Daniel Radcliffe doesn't have to do that. I was like, Paul Dano's a pretty woman.
Yes, he is.
He make a pretty girl. That's not a thought I thought I'd ever have. Using these, Hank leads Manny to believe that Manny is in love with a woman named Sarah, who rides the bus alone every day. Manny falls in love with Sarah, and it is love that motivates him to try and find civilization with Hank. In reality, Hank is very much in love with Sarah, having seen her ride the bus every day but never talking to her due to his own shyness. He has a photo of her that he took secretly while on the bus set as a wallpaper on his phone and follows her on social media. As he looks through photos, it is revealed that she's happily married and has a child. Hank impersonates Sarah to help Manny learn to talk to women, but they end up connecting and kiss.
Mm-hmm.
They have a falling out after Hank reveals that Manny never knew Sarah during his life. Feeling betrayed over Hank's hypocrisy and self-restraint, Manny states he wishes to be fully dead again. At this time, Hank experiences strange mental flashes of surreal images recalling his journey and suggests that one of Manny's powers is to affect his mind. Despite the tension between them, when Hank is attacked by a bear, Manny moves under his own power for the first time, crawling after his injured friend and igniting one of his farts from the campfire to scare away the bear. Hank loses consciousness and wakes up to Manny carrying him to Sarah's house, despite Hank's protests. While Sarah is in the house, Manny talks to Sarah's daughter, Chrissy. Expecting her to be impressed, he demonstrates several of his powers, inadvertently frightening her with his compass erection, which Hank quickly slaps down. Sarah is alerted by her daughter's crying and calls the police at the sight of Hank and Manny's once again inanimate corpse. Hank is soon patched up, but the cops discover photos of Sarah on his phone and become suspicious. Hank's father also appears, mistaking Manny's corpse for Hank when asked by the paramedics to confirm his identity. After being interviewed by the local television news and deliriously professing on air his gratitude for Manny and his magical powers, Hank runs away with Manny's body. Hank's pursuers discover the structures he built, which in actuality seem to be quite close to Sarah's house, as if he had been there for some time instead of journeying through the forest. The police, Sarah, her husband, her daughter, a reporter, a cameraman, and Hank's father all follow him to the beach. That's the entire cast.
Cornered. Yeah, that's the whole cast.
Hank lets out a long fart as he is taken away by the police. Shortly after, to everyone's shock and horror, and in Chrissy and Hank's father's case, amusement, Manny begins violently farting until he floats back into the ocean and skims quickly away, propelled by his own flatulence, he and Hank sharing one last smile. So this movie is insane. I don't think I need to tell you that. I think you got that.
I think you understood by the synopsis.
I think the synopsis explained perfectly what a fucking fever dream this
yes.
is. So, it's interesting.
It is interesting. It, like, it you never really know what's going on.
Yeah, so at first you're like, well, how did he get here? What happened?
How did he get to on the
How's island? He on this island?
Well, it kind of opens with, I like how it opens because it opens with, like, this, like, various debris floating in the ocean that's been written on and him saying, like, we crashed and I'm on the island alone and I'm hungry and thirsty.
Yeah, so he basically, and so then it comes up and he starts talking to the corpse eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they're in the cave is really the first time we start to, like, know things.
Yeah.
And he's like, but you ran away, didn't you? And you're like, well, hold on.
Well, hold on.
Because that's not what the boat said.
No.
The boat didn't say he ran away. The boat said he was on a ship and the ship crashed.
Yeah.
Like a boat and the boat crashed. I don't want to say ship. That sounds too big. and then, so you're like, well, okay. That's an inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of don't really notice it because it's just the opening credits of trash. So you're not like, wow, that trash.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, the more they go through, the more you're kind of like, they are wasting a lot of time.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of trash here. Like, a lot. Like, they're building civilizations out of the trash. And you're like, that's a lot of trash.
Yeah.
How are they finding the exact things that they need to build these structures? And yeah, they do, a lot of the movie, he tries to get, like, cell service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing, too, is it's like, you never think that, it's weird, because you never think that, like, Manny actually knew Sarah, even though they talk about it a lot, because you're like, I know that's his phone.
Yeah,
like, because we see it at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's his phone. So you're like, it's just a lot of, like, people saying one thing and the movie showing you another and you having to constantly be like, what was real again? what's happening again?
Yeah. I think part of that is just having an unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
Like Hank.
Yeah, it's like, because I feel like sometimes Hank convinces himself.
That, yeah, I think he definitely does because he's just so disconnected from reality.
And then you're like, okay, because when the corpse is first on the beach farting,
yeah,
you're like, it's the body releasing the gases from decomp.
Yeah.
Because that happens. Mm-hmm. And, but then obviously at some point, it's like, well, it's not.
Well, it's not that he's a Swiss Army man.
Right. He's a, yeah. He's a Swiss Army man.
He's a, he, yeah.
What more can I say?
What more can I say? That's like what he is.
Yeah. So very interesting. And then at the, I think the most interesting is the ending though, because mm-hmm. the ending, you're like, he's crazy. He was crazy the whole time.
Yeah.
He's been in these little woods the whole time. Like he never was yeah. shipwrecked. He's just basically fallen in love with this woman. He ran away and basically became homeless outside of her house and yeah. had all these delusions and was basically dying from not taking care of himself. Yeah. And Manny is a corpse that he found.
And
that he has projected onto his, like, will to live yeah. is, like, projected onto Manny.
Yeah.
And Manny is, like, his brain's answer to him being suicidal, yes. essentially. But then, Manny farts away on the ocean. And you're like, what?
To go help another suicidal boy.
Yeah, and usually you would be like, well, that's just Hank. But his father reacts to it.
Yeah, the little girl reacts.
The little girl reacts. The reporters react. Everyone reacts.
Yeah.
In the last word of the movie is, the last line of the movie is Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah.
Mary Kate Elizabeth Winstead. Mary Elizabeth Winstead going, what the fuck? And that's like, so everyone else is seeing.
Yeah.
And it's not just...
It's really happening.
You're like, what? Was that real? Was he right? And you don't know, because the movie ends.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know.
I think it's probably somewhere in between.
I think
that Hank is definitely unwell.
I think it's probably
But I
not.
Also think that Manny probably wasn't just all in Hank's mind.
Right. It's hard.
At least as far as the flatulence goes.
Yeah. So, I want to find... I've got this this article from something called thetake.com.
Okay.
Which says, what message do Swiss Army men send on social norms and self-delusion? Mm-hmm. But I would like to find, like, some theories on the ending.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be good to explain, I think, talk about first.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about the messages. So this is from Medium.
Okay.
Which is a little bit more of a well-known site, called Was Manny Real? A Starving Hallucination or a Real Magical Farting Corpse?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whatever this is, the reflection that drives you to come to a conclusion could save your life. So, here we go. No, this is definitely not a movie about gay necrophilia or schizophrenic narcotic user farting drama, although it may look like that at first. Skipping ahead. This is them talking about how they like the movie. Here we go. So breaking down Hank. From suicidal isolation to an internal search in order to eventually crawl back to humanity, the whole story is based on Hank's existential drama and his own self-acceptance. All his traumas and retained wishes make his mind overflow, realizing he was getting older and his life was still a black hole. So empty, it slowly drowned him into a depression that bewildered him, nearly leading to his own death. The story begins with Hank getting ready to take his own life. He is stranded on a desert island, trying to hang himself, but just before doing it, he sees the corpse and has the impulse of checking it out to certify if it is really dead. So the rope breaks and Hank falls on the ground. He approaches the body, does a heart massage, and Manny farts. Hank's relationship with Manny is worth a study. The corpse appears as a very unlikely hope of surviving in what appeared to be a wild environment. Right in the beginning of the movie, we notice empty packages and little paper boats with writing all over. We notice, I am bored, I don't want to die alone, written in it. What guides us through the theory that maybe Manny's small signs of light could be explained by Hank's desperate fear of being lonely. But who is Manny after all? My personal interpretation is that Manny is really a corpse Hank has found at some point during his hideaway. The three landscapes where the story goes, to my mind, were psychological, including the beach looking like a desert island and the fact that it was a desert because of his isolation, Maybe he lived this adventure inside his head in favor of reliving all his loneliness and reflecting on what he was going through in his own life, just like an existential void. From the moment Hank encounters Manny and realizes that he has lost his memory and has no idea who he is, Hank begins to teach him everything as if Manny were a newborn child. Hank explains stuff such as the Big Bang, the basics of history and culture, and has conversations in which he tries to explain to Manny how it is being alive. But here's the first point. Hank doesn't remember his life clearly either, except for events when he was much younger. He has no idea what happened and or how he appeared on the island. Mm-hmm. During their conversations, we realize Manny is clearly Hank's extension. From all they've talked about Hank's father, the episode with his mother, his sexual dysfunction, his traumas, his values, and the censorship, he feels like when he dresses himself as Sarah and says his dad would get mad if he saw him dressed like that, or when he censors Manny about what he can and cannot say. Mm-hmm. Manny is really Hank's extension, which makes us question if he's really alive. The fact Manny has lost his memory and is trying to recover, and how Manny makes him rethink all the reasons that were leading to Hank's suicidal impulse in the first place, that's what makes me question up to this point how real he is. All Manny's superpowers were things Hank knew how to do because they were too gross, or... All of Manny's superpowers were things Hank knew somehow he couldn't do because they were all too gross to be done in public. An aggression to social modesty and were earlier censored by his father when he was younger, such as public erections and carefree farts. Mm-hmm. Then it's a quote, so I'm skipping that. Still not sure if Manny is either Hank's hallucination or a real magical corpse. So what do the farts mean in the story? As you may have realized, Swiss Army Man is an atypical movie. I understand how most people would take the farting symbolism as nothing but a gross joke, but trust me, there's something a lot more meaning hiding in Daniel Radcliffe's corpse. The film brings up a deep existential void, aspects that were exposed respecting modesty parameters would simply kill the entire proposal of the movie. It's a rational film within the framework of philosophical reasoning. Making it any less hilarious or bizarre would turn it into boring schizophrenic madness or just boring self-reflection. Farting is a metaphor for being free to express yourself and whatever is in your heart and head however you want. And they talk about that all the time. Like, yeah. They literally make that comparison like 20 times.
Yeah.
So, it ends up that Manny starts helping Hank to understand himself deeply, subtly forcing him to reflect over the way he used to live his life and realize what could have possibly gone wrong. Manny is much more like Hank's puppet than another person. You notice it clearly when Manny is able to reveal much more about Hank than Hank does himself. Yeah, I think that's, like, one of the biggest things that makes me feel like Manny is being projected on is Manny, like, knows things that there's, like, no possible way he would know about Hank. Like, and it's, like, you could make some guesses of being, like, you probably, like, if you saw him trying to kill himself, you could be, like, you came out here to kill yourself.
Yeah.
That's, like, okay, educated guess. But then there's some other stuff, too, about, like, his dad and how he is at parties and around girls. That he gets really specific.
Yeah.
Like, too specific from what Hank tells us. But it's interesting because Hank always tells him just enough that if Manny were super acute, he could probably guess.
Yeah.
So it's just another one of those things where it's like, just enough that you're like, he's probably not real.
But
he could be.
It's plausible but not probable.
Yeah. So, of course, we know Sarah's not his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's just a
lady. Never was.
Nope, just a person he saw on the bus.
Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Yep.
But basically, like, the way what she represents is the possibility of having a happy life.
Yeah.
Living instead of simply surviving, he projected on her the life experience he wished he had. A lot of Hank's traumas kind of just come back to being loved.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so, this is still in the Medium article. The author says, I don't think Hank has ever been in love with Sarah. Hank was searching for love, but it wasn't Sarah's love, nor Manny's love. It could be his dad's love. He could want to feel any love. Hank was deeply sad and lonely, and he just wanted to feel anything but useless to everyone around him. We learn he has struggles with his dad, but it seems like they haven't talked to each other for a very long time. Did you know that when Hank sort of reunited with his dad, if that can be affirmed somehow, that is when he's actually able to say goodbye to Manny? When Hank's dad comes out of the car and is asked for identifying the dead body laying on the ground, he clearly exposes his sadness and desperate over the hypothesis of having lost his child. Seeing that, Hank gains courage to be his true self, and they end up getting the love they've been searching for the entire time. Mm-hmm. When Hank tells his dad that his mom would be really happy that somebody loves him, he isn't referring to anyone's love besides his own dad's love. Hank ran away and almost killed himself because he was convinced nobody loved him, including his own dad. But seeing it all now, it might have changed. And honestly, I don't feel like they ever left Sarah's backyard. Everything seems wild, dark, scary, and dangerous when you're not completely fine. And then after that, we have the finale. Manny has his bizarre triumphal exit. Farting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't know, it's weird, like, everyone reacts to him. It's like, everything makes sense. Yeah, they're just in the woods the whole time. He's just a corpse. It's just him projecting. Like, all of that makes sense.
Until the very end.
And you're like, well, was it? Was it real? Well, it's like, I agree. I don't think they were ever on a desert island.
No, I don't think so either. I think the desert island was just how he felt.
Agreed.
Because that is what it feels like.
I know. So, I don't know. I think this is the most common, acceptance of the movie is that none of it's real.
Yeah.
And that the end is either just another hallucination, like his, like, closing of the door, if you will, on that chapter of his life, or that it's just, another hallucination, or it's symbolic.
I kind of like that everyone, like, sees it at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
at one thing, it would get him out of a lot of legal trouble.
Exactly.
Which he's sure to be in.
Because people would be like, oh.
So, there is a Reddit post on r/SwishArmyMan where somebody basically says exactly what I just said, which is, it's all fake, the desert island's fake, they're really outside Sarah's house the whole time, whatever, and that Manny is just a corpse he found,
basically.
So, this person says, I think it's real.
Okay.
At the end, there's a terrible sobering moment where you're pulled away from the magical land of trust and farts and music to realize that Hank has been lugging around a dead body. And you question it. Is Hank actually crazy? And the dread sets in as his dad and the news crew and the girl all react to the situation. Was he imagining all of this? Then he steals Manny away. And before, it would have been normal, but suddenly it's disgusting and pathetic. Manny no longer speaks. Hank has been delusional this whole time. They're on the beach, and it's all coming to a close with the most important people in Hank's life. They all know he's insane and in a horrifying way. And then Manny farts. Gloriously. Sputtering and unbelievable, it's real. The girl sees it, the dad laughs. Others witness this magical act as Manny jettisons into the sunset on flatulence and dreams. It's so beautiful, and as quickly as the movie turned, the relief comes back, and that magical fart musical adventure was all real, and it feels right.
I like that.
I don't think it makes sense for the directors to have this moment where we all doubt that Hank is really crazy, and then they show us that Manny is real and witnessed by others for Hank to have been crazy this whole time. Or that's how I took the movie. It's real. How? I don't know. Ass magic? Don't care. Still loved it.
I really like that.
Yeah, I think
that's a good take on it.
I mean, I think that that's, like, the most important, if you're gonna say, like, this is real.
Yeah.
The most important thing is, like, well, why would they make it not real? That's really the only piece of large evidence you have for it is, why wouldn't it be real?
Exactly.
Because then it's a pathetic, gross man living in the woods, and that's what you've watched for an hour and a half. And then it's true, like, as soon as you see Hank steal the corpse, you're like,
it's sad, and it's like,
you're no longer like, aw, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
It's not cute anymore.
It's not.
But then at the end,
the whimsy is gone.
The whimsy is gone. And as soon as the cop finds the photo of Sarah, honestly, the whimsy is gone.
It's true.
And she looks down, and it's this whole thing, and you're like, oh my god, oh no. And then he comes to life, and you're like, okay.
Okay, it was.
It makes you trust him again.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And it makes you, it feels like it validates your entire experience with the film.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like one of those things where it's like, I don't know if it's actually in the real world real or if his mind is still, I don't know. It certainly makes you care for the narrator again, those last few moments. Because before, you're kind of like, oh no.
Yeah.
He's about to go to jail.
But then you're like, oh, well, it was real.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard.
It is hard.
It's like, I don't know if I think it's real, but I mean,
I like the idea that it's real.
It's very real to him.
Yes.
I think that's
I know important. It's real to him.
That's important, I think.
Yeah.
Is that it's important to him. So sad.
Yeah.
So sad. So sad.
Really interesting. I have some trivia.
Go for it.
Okay. So Paul Dano revealed in an interview that he wanted to be in the movie after hearing a one-sentence synopsis from directors Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. Specifically, the directors told Dano they wanted to make a movie where the first fart makes you laugh and the last fart makes you cry.
Very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Worked.
Daniel Radcliffe promoted the movie by touring Los Angeles and New York City with a Manny doll as his companion, attending interviews, fan conventions, and even roller coasters next to him.
That's so funny.
A fake version of Manny was made to be used in most of the film, but Daniel Radcliffe insisted on being in every single shot. The dummy was only used in a few shots where the stunts were too dangerous for Radcliffe, but Radcliffe would always throw and toss the dummy.
Aww. He was like, I want to do it!
I want to do it!
Let me do it!
This is my role!
Let me do it! I'm Manny! And I'm like, okay, Daniel, sure.
Paul Dano's character is named Hank Thompson, which is a reference to Tom Hanks, who starred in Castaway that had the same deserted island theme. Daniel Radcliffe had stated that this is his favorite movie he has ever made.
Aww.
Songs are all a cappella and are written and recorded by Andy Hull and Robert McDowell of Manchester Orchestra.
The songs in this are kick-ass.
Kick-ass.
Truly so funny, so good.
Ba, 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 ba,
I love them
ba, ba,
because they're, like, so... Okay. The way that they're, like, these indie songs, but they're just describing what's going on in the scenes is so funny to me.
Due to its, at times, juvenile humor, particularly its avid fart jokes,
that's it.
Many audience members walked out of the theater when it was screamed at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival.
The
farts aren't just for being farts.
It's interesting. Fart humor turns people off. It just does.
But it's like,
because it's never used responsibly.
This is used responsibly.
It's the only movie.
Yeah.
In which fart humor is used responsibly.
It's like farting is like, it's like means something.
I know. I mean, yeah, it's like if I would be honest. My first reaction to the farts was not a positive one.
No, it wasn't.
I was like, okay, so this is happening. But then you watch.
And you're like, oh.
This is why you can't leave movies.
Yes.
Because it's possible that you're right. It's really possible that you're right. Mm-hmm. And the fart jokes, they're going to not need to. Because in most cases, you could take them out. You still got a movie.
Yeah.
This is not one of those.
No.
It needs to happen.
Yeah.
Also, that's the whole point is that it's gross.
Yeah.
And that we cringe away from it, even though it's a perfectly natural thing.
Exactly.
That's, like, the point of everything. He has a boner compass. That's
yeah.
gross. It's weird. Daniel, whoever made that fucking... There's, like, a little remote-controlled tent in Daniel Radcliffe's pants. It's gross. But it's, like... It's natural.
It is.
And that's the point, is like, why do we...
Why do we fear things that are natural?
Why are we so scared to just let ourselves do stuff
yeah.
that everyone... Why do we think we're weird for doing something that literally everybody else does?
Exactly.
The human experience is not unique.
Andy Hull, who composed the film's soundtrack, appears at the end as the cameraman. The film was filmed in 22 days. Members of the cast and crew contributed to Manny's farts, including Paul Dano. Daniel Radcliffe claims to have not contributed a single fart.
Wow.
One of the shadow puppet movie scenes that Hank shows to Manny is a character on a broomstick, likely alluding to Daniel Radcliffe's most notable character, Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Redwood Forest scenes were filmed in Sequoia Park in Eureka, California. A lot of this, though, was filmed in the Bay Area forests near Half Moon Bay, California. Let's see... and then it has a weird thing that says, not only were both of the men who directed this film named Daniel and Dan, but the lead actor is also named Daniel, and his co-star's last name is Dano. And I'm like, wow.
Somebody, like, noticed that, and they were like, someone needs to put this on IMDb right now. Right now.
Did.
That's like when they were like, Abraham Lincoln was shot on this day. JFK was shot on this day. Their birthdays were this day. Their assassins' birthdays were this day. Coincidence?
I think not.
And you're like, yes, that it happened 100 years apart. It is, in fact, a coincidence. A crazy one, but it's a big old world, ain't it?
It's a big old world.
I was thinking about this, too, like, how the whole movie, you have this message of, like, you can be happy outside the constraints of being normal, and they kind of start to think about, like, well, what if we just lived in the forest
yeah.
and we never left? And then you find out that about Manny's real life,
mm-hmm.
And you find out that he's just some guy that killed himself, also. Yeah. He jumped off a bridge and killed himself, and that's why he washed up wherever he washed up. Is because he...
And, like, this... Literally the thing that saved you from killing yourself is someone else killing themselves.
Yeah. It's, like, so sad. Yeah. And then it's, like, Manny being, like... It's kind of them realizing, like, you can't not live... in a society.
Exactly.
Like, it's
wherever you live, it's still a society.
Yeah, it's like, you still have to deal with bad things that come along with living.
Yeah.
So sad.
So sad.
Poor Manny. Yeah. I'm, like, so curious about Manny's life.
Yeah, me too.
Like, his real life. Oh, I know it's just a standalone movie and that's not part of it, but I really want to know, like, what happened? Was he, like, he's wearing a suit, so, like, we could assume he was probably, like, a businessman of some kind. I don't know.
What would you give this movie?
Oh, it's really good. I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
Me too. It's really good.
It's really good. It's, like...
It surprises you.
It stays with you.
It does.
It stays with
you. And that's what I told you. I was like, it really, like, it sticks with you.
It does. You're like, yeah... I'll remember that.
Yeah. This movie, it just shines through that, like, everyone must have so much fun.
It just felt like a movie that everyone enjoyed making.
Yeah.
And we were talking at one point about Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano, and I said, do you think they're friends? Because, like, how could you make this movie and not be friends? Like, I feel like you literally couldn't.
Yeah.
And then it was like... They weren't before, but now they are really good friends.
Yes. Yeah, they became really good friends while making this.
It's like, you'd have to. How could you make this and not be really
exactly.
good? Exactly. It's like, too much. It's too much. So nice.
Yeah, I think everyone had a really good time making it.
It just obviously seems like Daniel... the kind of movie you would love making.
Yeah, and like, this is Daniel Radcliffe's favorite film he's ever made.
Yeah. What? Harry Potter? He didn't...
No, he said this is his favorite... He said this is his favorite one.
You mean he didn't enjoy...
That
making eight
that 10 years
that
of
10 years of being one character,
yeah,
nearly ruining his career. A career
he didn't enjoy that more than playing a flatulent corpse opposite a good friend.
Yeah, being in a good movie, being in a whimsical. I mean, don't get me wrong, Harry Potter movies are fun,
but it's like this is an A24 film.
It always is. What is A24? How do they do it?
I know!
They're gonna get too big one day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And it's gonna all fall apart, but right now, that's not now.
The ride is incredible.
The ride's incredible, but I'll be sad when the fall finally happens. Yes. It'll be like, well, capitalism ruins everything. It's just so, like, they make so many good films.
Yeah, they do.
So many. It's like, anytime A24 is on that, you're like, well, that's probably gonna like that.
We need to watch Antebellum.
Okay.
That, Oh, that movie. It's like a Southern Gothic horror about slavery.
Yeah.
Janelle Monáe.
Oh, hey. You want to see that movie that's about to come out in the theaters?
Tenet.
No, not Tenet.
Just came out. I do want to see that, though.
The other one. Also with Robert Pattinson and Tom Holland.
Oh, that comes out on Netflix.
Oh, on Netflix.
It's The Devil All the Time.
Yeah. I'm scared of seeing that movie, but...
We're going to watch it.
I know. I'm scared of Robert Pattinson. Like, literally ever since we watched The Lighthouse, I can't even think about him without being like, oh my god, that's so scary. Like,
I really think that emo Batman might.
I hope so, but I just don't know if I'm ever going to be able to forget grungy black and white Robert Pattinson just angrily beating off in a shack. It's like, that is etched in my mind.
Yeah.
And then... On top of that, just being unintelligible for 90% of a film, knowing that he would, like, shove his own fist down his throat in order to make himself gag so he could get into character. And you're like, this man's fucking unhinged. Unhinged. There's, like, a list of celebrities I never want to meet. I never want to run into them. Robert Pattinson's on the list. It's Robert Pattinson, Jaden Smith. I do not want to meet Jaden Smith. Tom Cruise, Mel Gibson.
Yes.
Like, these are all people that I'm like, oh, and Jared Leto.
Jared Leto would be so scary to me.
He's
a cult leader now.
What?
He has, like, a compound.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
I was right to be scared.
Yeah.
It's just, like, these are people that I believe do not have the mental facilities to, like, if something went wrong, to get it together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, if the world ends, they'll be the first to start killing. And they're all in good enough shape.
I just am waiting for the day for Tom Cruise to crack.
He's gone. It's gonna.
He's gonna snap.
Something big. I can't wait, honestly. Something big is gonna happen in Scientology. Some person is gonna come out with an expose bigger than any expose that's mm-hmm. already come out. Something's gonna happen, and it's gonna be over.
Yeah.
It's gonna be over. Or he's gonna kidnap his children. I don't know.
Something's gonna happen.
I'm not
He's gonna Josh Powell that shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we're all gonna be like, wow. Mm-hmm. And someday, 20 years from now, true crime podcasts or whatever media
are going to talk about now. Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and they'll be like, the story, he was an actor, a famous actor. And people are going to be like, whoa.
In these old movies, he did like all his Mission
own,
Impossible.
He did all his own stunts. That's why he was famous. For
pretty much. That's why
pretty much it. I don't really get the appeal.
He wasn't like anything special, but he did his own stunts.
He's really short. And so everyone in the movies had to be shorter than him.
Yes.
Which put a lot of actors out of work, because that's I always like those things that's like, actors in real life, smaller than you think. Horses in real life, bigger than you think. It's funny. True.
Do you have a review?
Yeah. Sure do.
Cool.
Okay. This is 1 out of 10. What the fuck? Perfect last words. Perfect last line of this film. That was about the summation of this absolute abomination of a film. I never watched a preview, never knew anything about the movie until I turned it on. At first, I thought it was going to be a movie like Castaway that showed some textbook uses for a corpse in survival, shedding light on
what the... What textbook uses for?
Textbook uses.
What textbook are you reading?
What's the textbook that has all the uses for a
corpse? Cite your sources.
I imagine eating them is one of it, but at this point, he's too far gone. You can't eat him.
You would get sick and die.
You can't eat this guy.
He's been in the water!
Yeah, he's decomp, major decomp. Shedding light on the wasted pilot's body that Tom Hanks buries.
Pilots? He's not a pilot.
No, Tom Hanks, I think, that, is there
oh,
a, there's
is it
a
Tom
pilot?
Hanks?
Yeah. Wow, was I wrong. Indeed you were. That's what you thought this was going to be.
Yeah.
Indeed you were wrong. This is why, if you don't know anything about a movie, like you haven't looked at anything, mm-hmm. but you should not come into it expecting it to be something.
Yes.
You can't be like, I knew nothing, but I was expecting this. And you're like, but you just said you
but
knew
nothing. But you just said you knew nothing.
You just said you knew nothing.
And you didn't even
because if you
up.
Had read the most basic plot synopsis, you would have known
if you
that
watched
this is,
the trailer.
This is not a Castaway style film. My second thought about a half hour in was that maybe he was on some Pacific island where he would come across some World War II ruins. To add to the story, and that perhaps he was just losing his marbles to a corpse friend. Why would you think he was going to come across some World War II ruins? What about... What in the first half hour of this movie gave you the impression that World War II...
You know, I think this strikes me as a World War II film.
Yeah, it's clearly present day. I mean...
If there's anything that can make this film more interesting, it's World War II.
I mean... we could probably say that about most movies, but I would say, like, what about the first half hour of this film made you think, oh, he'll probably come across some World War II ruins? I would think that if I was writing this movie, that would be my next logical step. He's just coming up with nothing. He's like, what if this happened? And you're like, sit on the ride, buddy. Sit down on the ride. Like, let the ride take you where the ride's. Stop trying to jump off the tracks.
It's like if you're on a roller coaster and you're like, what if we went that way?
And you're like, well, we're not gonna go that way. So sit down, son. Keep your arms and legs inside. We're not going that way. You can design a roller coaster if you want to go that way. But he was losing his marbles to a corpse friend. That is sort of true.
Yeah.
Then about an hour in, I started to wonder how a man lost on a desert island, as the description states, could have enough strength to hump around a bloated, decomposing body that probably weighed over 200 pounds. Okay, first of all, couple things. He's not on a desert island anymore. He jet skied away in the first 15 minutes to a mainland island. He's not on an island anymore. There is no desert island. The deserted island is over.
Deserted island was in the first 15 minutes of the film.
He's good now.
Yeah.
He's on a mainland, baby.
This is about him avoiding society.
Yeah, basically. And I don't, I mean, look, would it be easy to carry around a decomposing body? No, but I bet you could do it.
I bet you could do it.
You're a strapping young man.
Yeah.
You can do it. You're Paul Dano.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention how he could drink the bile that came out of his mouth and not vomit at the very smell.
It's well, not bile, it's water.
It's water. Or
because he's a Swiss Army man.
Is he, get it? He's like a Swiss Army knife, multi-tool.
But he's like a man.
But he's a man version of that.
Of that, yeah.
Because he helps him survive. That's the thing. How is it that he wasn't waking up to a body covered in crabs every morning?
What?
Or seagulls? Again, he's not on the beach anymore. The beach was...
It's gone. They're in the...
45 minutes
They're ago. In the woods.
There's no... There's a bear in the film.
They're in the woods.
They're in the woods. The beach, that was 45 minutes. We left the beach. The beach, we left. I don't know if you saw, but we jet skied away. Daniel Radcliffe using his farts as a motor. We're not at the beach anymore. So that's the reason he's not waking up to that.
Yeah.
Then, it finally came about 20 minutes from the end. He's a homeless, mentally ill stalker who's been camping out behind his victim's house, stealing their trash, and making crafts with it.
Yes.
I wouldn't call him a stalker.
I also wouldn't call him a stalker. I don't think...
A stalker kind of implies you're watching your victim.
Yeah, which he's not. He just has a picture of her that he's... It's creepy. I'm not saying he's not creepy, but I don't think he's a stalker either. I also don't think he's like... trying to terrorize anyone.
No, he's not trying. He didn't even know.
Most stalkers.
He didn't even know he was there.
I know. He was like, what?
He wakes up. Same as us, baby. We don't know he's there. He doesn't know he's there. So, yeah. What could have been the making of a great suspense thriller. was wasted. as if this was a suspense thriller. Was wasted on fart and boner gags and just flat out duping the audience to watch it for the first hour and a half by lying to them. And not in an ironic good plot structure way, but just by confusing us to death. In my opinion, the best part of this movie was the woman's reaction at the very end. What the fuck? So what I like about this is... the saying that because the ending is that it might have been in his mind. Because saying maybe the corpse wasn't doing all that shit.
Yeah.
That's... lying to you.
You lied to me!
Me watching Clue and being like, I thought it was the maid!
They lied to me!
They lied to me! They gave me false information so that the twist would be better. That's literally like seeing it. I don't know. I can't think of another good comparison right now, but I don't know. That's dumb. That's a dumb thing to think. Also, this isn't a suspense thriller film.
No!
It isn't any
way. Also, you look it up and it just immediately says comedy, fantasy, or dramedy.
Yeah, it's not like a fucking suspense thriller. Now, we could make it in. I feel like with some editing, this could become a suspense thriller. Like some the right music, different lighting, like whatever, but this is not what this is.
No.
This is a whimsy movie. This is about whimsy.
Yes.
It's supposed to be fun. And a good time. And you're supposed to get a little...
You're supposed to get lost in the story.
And... I also... A lot of people were like, I don't... What is... This, like, is fake deep. And you're like, it's not even deep.
It's not. No.
They literally say the theme, like, 20 times.
Yeah.
They literally have multiple conversations where Manny's like, but why is it weird? I don't think it's weird. And then Paul's like, it's just weird,
yeah,
okay?
But he can't really explain why it's weird,
weird
because that's how society works.
And you're like, that's the theme, bitch.
Yeah.
That's the theme.
It's like how the rules of our society are just so arbitrary.
Yeah. It's like, that's the theme. And they say that 100 million times.
Yeah.
And, like... I don't know what else you want. That's, I don't know.
They say the theme.
I don't think it's a deep. I don't think it's meant to. I don't think it's meant to be like, wow, this is a puzzle. Now this
I think
is a
it's
thinker.
Like just a fun, weird movie that's like, wow, that's a nice message.
It's not supposed to be like a movie you gotta sit and think on.
Yeah.
It's just I mean, like when you're watching it, you're not immediately like, ah, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like. It comes together, I think,
definitely.
Fairly easily.
Yeah.
I don't think it's trying to challenge your mind. It's not a murder mystery.
No.
It's not a whodunit. It's just like...
Like, but just because you don't get it in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, they lied. I didn't like it. It could have been a suspense movie. You know all the suspense movies that tell you at the very beginning what happened mm-hmm. and how it happened? And
yep.
They're like, this is the murderer, and the whole time it was this. I don't like that. You know, I hate when movies don't just straight up, in the first two sentences, give you the plot. That really makes me mad. They lied to me. That's how I felt when I watched the last Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
I was like, that didn't seem set up.
Nope.
That didn't seem like what we
that
were doing.
That seemed like they made a decision at the last minute.
It's almost like you shouldn't plan a trilogy and then just make it and not plan out the basic plot structure. Hey, that's just me. I'm no filmmaker. I'm just a girl with a podcast.
Just a girl with a podcast.
Just a girl
with Isn't that always the way?
Isn't that the way? Oh, man. Speaking of girls with podcasts doing jobs that they shouldn't be doing. So solving murders... I was just, like, thinking about this.
Yeah.
Did you know that less murders are solved now than they were in the 1960s, but the crime rate has gone down?
We talked about this last night.
That's right. It's insane.
But our audience didn't know that we talked about it last
night. So the crime rate has been steadily dropping for the last 30 years, if you didn't know, audience. Even though you might think crime is worse than ever because of the internet. Actually, crime's better than ever. It's never been so safe. but of... all the crime that happens nowadays, the police solve less of it than ever, despite the fact that they have more technology, more cameras, more witnesses, more forensic evidence than ever. They somehow solve only like 1/3 the amount of crimes that they used to solve. So, you know, people always used to say like, oh, well, what are you going to do when you get murdered? And it's like, well, what are you going to do without the police when you get murdered? And you're like, and people would say... haha, white women with podcasts.
Yeah.
That joke. That might be a little more true than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I'm starting to think on it. And it's like, there have been some famously unsolved murders that white women with podcasts have solved.
Yes. Yes.
Like, infamous, hard-to-solve murders. And you're like, wow, this lady did that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have you ever seen the documentary series on Netflix, Don't Fuck with Cats?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it this. A lot of people complain about this in the documentary. There's, like, this... if you don't know what it's about this guy named Luca Magnotta, who basically killed one guy. But he was kind of, like... we'll call it, like, setting up to be a serial killer.
Yeah, he was, like... yeah, he was gonna be a serial killer.
He probably would have been a serial killer had he not been caught.
Yeah, yeah.
After this one guy.
He was caught at the beginning of a serial killer's career.
Yes. Which is what you should do with serial killers.
So ideal situation.
Good for the cops. But he basically got on police's radar because he was uploading videos of him killing cats to the internet and these like weird fucked up web pages or whatever. And some animal rights group activists basically found it and freaked out. And they started like tracking him and they basically figured out all this information and called him like multiple tips to the police. Not just because he was abusing animals, which he was, which is what they were really mad about, but also because they were like, this clearly has some potential to become something a little more dangerous. And the police basically, like, ignored them. But then when a guy died, because of all these tips, the police had a guy to basically look for.
Yeah.
And they basically already knew where he lived because of, like, these people. But it's interesting that, like... the cops still didn't really use the people to solve the crime at all.
Yeah.
They really didn't need the animal rights activists, internet sleuthing to help them at all. But yet, it was like, the internet sleuths were nearly caught up with the police.
Yeah.
Had they had the authority to arrest Luca Magnotta, they could have.
Exactly.
Before he ever killed anyone. And it's like, interesting how that happened.
Yes.
Interesting how... so a group of 10 people on Facebook found this serial killer before he was even a serial killer and located his address, and the police didn't get him till after he'd already killed someone.
Just interesting is all I'm saying.
I'm not saying defund the police.
But I'm also saying
if what we're worried about is that murders won't get solved, they're already not being solved.
We're well past that.
So, like... maybe we don't need to make that argument anymore because I too was like, wow, yeah, murders, that's probably the ultimate crime. I don't know what else you would need. Like, of course, I don't know who else would do that. And then I was like, oh, nobody's doing it, actually. Okay. I see.
Sounds good.
I see. So anyway.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, that didn't tie in, but I thought it was good to mention.
I think so, too.
Anyway, I'm a white woman with a podcast.
Yes.
Anyway, this has been White Women with Podcasts.
White Women with Podcasts.
Thanks for tuning in.
All right, guys. Watch Palm Springs. Donate to Patreon. There's tons of good stuff on there. What did we do last time?
Last week we did the Florida. Nope. Yep.
No, we did the Florida Project. And
the
then
week before. Nancy Drew. Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids. Bridesmaids. So now there is Bridesmaids up there. So you guys should go donate and you can get access to our entire back catalog of Patreon episodes.
Which is basically like an extra like almost 40 episodes.
It's basically just a different feed, but like with more like new movies.
Yeah, and some fun like little Q&As from early on when we were like, what is this going to be?
What is this going to be?
And then we were like, it's going to be another feed.
All right, guys, thank you.
All right.
Bye.